Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, what do you consider the center of the rock and roll universe?
I guess I'd say New York?
No.
Oh, all right. London?
No.
Well, then you must mean Detroit.
No.
Seattle? Athens? Memphis?
No, no, and no. The center of the rock and roll universe is clearly and without question Maumee, Ohio.
Dude, I drove through that town on the way to Canton just because of that episode.
There you go.
There was nothing there.
No.
It was like a Hardee's.
That's you got it. All right, it's day two of hardcore. Hardcore week.
Hardcore.
You're a hardcore kind of guy.
Yeah, man.
Right, Patrick?
Mm-hmm. Always have been. I love hardcore.
Okay, so it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us all week is...
Hunter Bennett.
Our hardcore expert, and we're at his house this week.
Yeah,
and,
rockin' the district.
Yes, and he's taking us through his
hardcore
experiences. But let me ask you, Patrick, when did you get into hardcore music?
Well,
or should we save this for day five when we get into DC?
We could,
yeah.
If you want to. Yeah, that might be an appropriate place to talk about it. Yep.
Right.
But I would say probably right around 1984. So growing up here in the suburbs of DC, I sort of missed a very crucial kind of wave. And it wasn't kind of until that second wave of like sort of Revolution Summertime that I really had the means and the sort of ability to get myself in to actually see shows, and not to mention the self-confidence to actually go down and mix with punks from the suburbs of Virginia. It was still a pretty big deal to drive in, and like it was a totally different world for me.
I think you totally got in at the right time, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you know, Southern California, that stuff was great in the early 80s, and DC had a lot of good bands in the early 80s, but I feel like DC really hit its stride in like 85.
Yeah. Of course, I never saw Minor Threat or Bad Brains in their prime, but you know, those are things that we'll discuss that.
Yeah,
later,
we'll get into that later. I bring this up though because yesterday Hunter was talking about how he got into hardcore, and then you also mentioned that the band you play now, Dot Dash, is more of, how would you describe the sound of Dot Dash?
Well, if I were trying to get under Terry's skin, I would say we're a hardcore band, and then he gets this look of disgust on his face. But, you know, I think of us as a punk rock band that has, like, sort of a lot of poppy overtones.
Yeah.
We often get described as, like, a power pop band or things. You know, my feeling is if anybody cares enough about what we're doing to describe us, whatever description they apply to it is okay by me, but I would describe us as a punk band.
And you play bass, and did you start off in hardcore bands?
I did. I was in a band called, we were called PNA, and we played the eighth grade talent show at my school.
Nice.
And because all hardcore bands had like three letter acronyms as their names. And the seventh graders were all chanting, "Please not another." And so shortly after that, we changed our name, God knows why, to Absence of Phallus. And we got a gig opening up a 10-band hardcore show at the Pi Lam fraternity down at the University of Pennsylvania. The headliners were this band Kilroy from Los Angeles. Mm. They were Los Angeles Oi. And like I said, we played at the very beginning. It was still light outside, and we played to an audience of like five, two of whom are skinheads sniffing glue out of a bag.
Fantastic.
But they too clapped politely, just like the other three audience
that's
members.
That's great. Wonderful.
Yeah. What song did you play at the talent show? Was it a cover or was it an original?
We did a couple of originals and two covers. We did Scream by Black Flag and Louie Louie.
Okay.
And our sort of hipster middle school head of school, who was actually a total dork, went up to our singer after it was over and said, "I know what the words to Louie Louie are. You're going to have to go to detention." And so he sent him to detention.
Really?
And
wow. Well, if you're going to go to detention.
That's right. There are worse reasons
to
go, right?
What are you in for?
Yeah. Louie Louie. okay. So I also bring this up because in today's episode, we're going to talk about Midwestern hardcore. Mm-hmm. And I have kind of sort of a connection to what we're talking about here,
right,
having grown up in Toledo, Ohio. Although I wish I could say like I was cool enough while I was actually, you know, in high school in Toledo to be into these bands, but I wasn't. But I kind of, I can, well, I'll talk a little bit about that in a little okay. bit here. But it wasn't really until I got to college that I got, you know, introduced to hardcore and felt like, I think you used the word yesterday, confidence.
That's what it was. You know? Exactly.
You know, to explore this kind of music, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the other crazy thing about hardcore is, like I mentioned yesterday, the first show I went to was the Circle Jerks at Love Hall. Like, you walked in, it was a building that had been set on fire. And and they still continued to have shows there after the, you know, the fire had been extinguished and the walls were all charred. There was no security. Right. There was like... anything could happen in a way. And DC, I mean, DC, like the 930 Club would have shows, or they'd do like church basements. But like, you know, in Toledo, I would imagine is a lot like Philadelphia, where you were walking into a place where it's like, if things went badly, God knows what would have happened. Yeah. There was no security. There was no, people had to police themselves and they didn't usually do a very good job of it.
That's right.
So what should we kick off with here? As we talk about the Midwest.
Well, an interesting thing about hardcore is, again, we're talking pre-internet era. And so, you know, regions had their own sounds. And so Southern California was very sort of poppy and like Beach Boys oriented, Dick Dale. The Midwest sort of more followed the lead of the East Coast, which was a sort of rougher, less melodic and sort of choppier, less musical would probably be a little bit unfair, but in a lot of ways it was kind of less sophisticated than the West Coast hardcore. Mm-hmm. So let us start out with the Meat Men with a song called One Down, Three to Go.
One down, three to go, one down, three to go, one down, three to go.
All right, there we go. Tesco V.
Yes, that was Lansing, Michigan's The Meat Men with a heartfelt tribute to John Lennon.
Oh, boy.
You know, so the there you have, you know, you have sort of, when people criticize hardcore, they talk about like the shouted vocals, the sort of, you know, rudimentary musicianship, the paddle drum beat. I mean, that song kind of had all those things, right. Which is not to say it's without its charm. The Meat Men were sort of a notoriously offensive band, and that was part of their appeal. You know, that's, and interestingly, this song actually, the famous alternative label Touch and Go Records was started in part by Tesco V, the singer of the Meat Men, as you mentioned, Jim. And so, you know, this is how Touch and Go got its start, and it ended up putting out Slint Records. So quite an evolution.
But doesn't a song like this, as offensive as it may be, doesn't it sort of crystallize a lot of the attitude of hardcore, which is that we want to tear down everything that you older people hold dear, right?
Yeah.
And so within the context of music, what would that be besides the Beatles?
Right? Yeah, exactly right. The most sacred of all
That's
things.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, you know, like most people that were in hardcore bands that are remembered today, Tesco V is actually somebody who knows a tremendous amount about music. He loves sort of like 70s hard rock, like Nazareth, and he was really into like the band Crime, and he loved the band ABBA. You know, the Meat Men went on to a long and fairly illustrious career as a hard rock band, and they were great at that. I mean, at various times he had Brian Baker from Minor Threat, Lyle Pressler, Stuart Kasson from Dove, who was a tremendous guitar player. They all played in versions of the Meat Men. Mm-hmm. You know, the first Meat Men record, a lot of people love it. This is not really the kind of hardcore that I love and listen to a lot, but it's certainly, you know, I recognize that there's a lot to like about it.
For a very brief period when I was doing a fanzine, I think at the apex of this fanzine's existence, I somehow got on the Touch and Go mailing label or promo list. And this was when they reissued the first Meat Man album. And I was lucky enough, I'd never heard the band before that. And it was kind of cool that, you know, to kind of go through and listen to it. But yeah, certainly no target to offend was left unoffended.
That's right. And we should note that the first Meat Man record is called We're the Meat Man and You Suck, which is a great title. And it also has some of the other songs on the record are Crippled Children Suck, Tooling for Anus, yep. I'm Glad I'm Not a Girl, and Blow Me Jaw,
yeah.
which isn't actually on the record, but the lyrics appear on the back cover.
Yeah.
So
couldn't be bothered to write actual music for it.
Yeah. So I think the Meat Men are served a valuable purpose, and that was to offend as many people as possible.
Yeah.
I love the cover art for this album,
too. Yeah, it's really classic.
That sort of cartoony look, but you get a sense just from looking at that what this music is going to be like, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this will lead into the next band, but it's funny. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, as I mentioned, South Toledo, which is adjacent to a suburb. I mean, literally just a short drive from where I grew up was a suburb called Maumee, which is what we're going to get into with this next band. But the Meat Men and Tesco V, even though you mentioned Lansing and didn't Touch and Go also have a, didn't they also have a connection to Chicago?
Yeah, they did.
Right.
Eventually.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But they also had, through this like web of connections, they sort of seemed like a Toledo band in some way, you know, like because of some of the other bands they interacted with. And so we knew of them, or they sort of had a presence there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Those Midwestern bands, particularly the ones, you know, in Michigan and Ohio, really sort of clung together. And I think by virtue of the Necros, being in Maumee, they hung out a lot with Negative Approach in Detroit.
Yeah.
And also, I think because there just weren't that many punk rock bands back then. I think if you were within a couple hours, that was probably close enough that you would do a lot of shows together and go check out other people's shows.
Totally. I mean, even the DC people were driving out there to connect with those guys as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this next band is actually from Maumee.
Yep. This is the Necros, the pride of Maumee, Ohio. And the Necros were teenagers at the time that they put out this record. This is from an EP called IQ32, and it came out in 1981. And it's actually Discord Records, the famed local DC punk label, did this thing from time to time where they were trying to help people get record labels off the ground. They would do a half release where it'd be a half Discord, half whatever label it was put out on. So this is half Discord, half Touch and Go.
Kiss a lot of you. Snatch your fault to the space. Put me back from the grave. Reject, reject. Deny your respect. Reject, reject. Ignore the respect. Tonight I'm all alone.
All right, there you go. Reject.
What I love about that song, and I think it's like 45 seconds long, it has just a remarkably plaintive vocal performance by Barry Henson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's, at the end of the first verse, he says something along the lines of, why am I always sad? And then in the second verse, when he hits that note where he's like, or that line where he's like, and I stopped caring so long ago, and he's singing it, it's really, I mean, he's sort of striking a emotional chord that you wouldn't think you would necessarily hear on a hardcore song.
Yeah.
Great point.
And it's, you know, you look at photos of the Necros when they were teenagers, and again, they were so young, and they look, you know, and I'll be the first to admit, I was a very awkward looking and acting teenager, and that's what they look like. And so I think, you know, with Reject, it seems like a really honest account of what it's like being an awkward teenager.
Well, I knew a lot about that, I'll tell you that right now.
Amen.
And like I said, I wish I could say that back in high school, I was really into this stuff. I just wasn't. Like, my world was pretty much stuff that was played on the radio, right? Mm-hmm. And so bands, when they played live, they to my world, my way of thinking, you played at Centennial Hall, which was the basketball arena at the University of Toledo, mm-hmm. or you played at the Masonic Auditorium, you know, things like that. And these would be big touring major label acts. I wasn't at that point yet where I would even really think or consider to go to like some show in a youth center or some, you know, burned out building or whatever it might be, you know. But I did have a friend, my friend Carl Behrens in high school, and he was the only one really whose house I would go to where he would have this record collection of stuff that like seemed foreign in some way. Right.
Where did it come from?
Yes. And we would go into his room and listen. And he was also into metal and that kind of stuff too. But then he would have some of these like punk 7 inches and you know, things that look like literally like somebody just like hand drew on the sleeve. Yeah. Right. And you were just like, what is this stuff? Right. And we would listen to it. And it seemed so dangerous at that time. Like, am I even supposed to be listening to this? Right. Yeah. Am I going to get arrested? Right. You know, like that's how
I'm going to smell when I come home.
That's right. That's how
to the punk rock.
Yeah. That's how it felt as a 16, 17 year old in, you know, suburban Ohio. Right. Like this is contraband in some way that you have. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I remember buying stuff at the record store and I would be like jumping out of my skin. Cause I, you know, we lived in sort of a part of Philadelphia, like tucked away in the far Northwest. And so, you know, you drive downtown and get the records. It would take a good half an hour, like maybe even an hour to get home. And I'd be so excited to listen to them that like, I couldn't believe it by the time I finally put them on. Cause you couldn't hear them on the radio. Like,
right.
You had to go into the record store and take a shot. You'd look at the covers and be like, this one looks like it might be kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then, or you'd be like, you look at one and be like, I can't tell, are these guys punk rock or heavy metal?
Right.
You never wanted to gamble and lose.
And when you got burned, it was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah, you'd end up with like a Cryptic Slaughter record. Yeah. So one more note before we move on from the Necros. The Necros bass player, Corey Rusk, actually, as I said, Tesco V was one of the starters of the Touch and Go record label. It's Corey Rusk who really sort of took over and ran with it.
Yeah.
And the Necros have an LP called Conquest for Death that is hailed as one of the best hardcore records of all time, but it has never been repressed. It's not available on CD. And in fact, like, you know, I love hardcore, but I don't think I've ever heard it all the way through because you just can't get it. I mean, I could listen to it online now, but that's cheating. And the rumor is that it's because when Corey Rusk and the Necros parted ways in like 84 or 85, they did so on bad terms. Uh-huh. And that's why the record has never been repressed.
Interesting.
So as to whether that's true or not, I don't know. Yeah. But that's what internet lore will tell you.
And the label did grow out of Tesco's fanzine called Touch and Go and sort of evolved into a label, which is interesting as well.
Yeah. In fact, if you turn around behind you, Patrick, you're not going to believe what you see. See on that bottom shelf there, about three down from the top?
Oh, yeah. That's a beautiful book.
It is the anthology of the Touch and Go fanzines. It's like 500 pages
long.
It's
amazing.
Yeah.
I was gifted that for Christmas about 2 years ago. It's a fantastic thing. Have you ever seen that, Jim?
Why don't you pull it out from the shelves there? This reminds me, sometime, Patrick, you should do a show on which you talk about your favorite rock and roll books.
I would love to do that. I really would. That is an incredible compendium there, folks. It's got everything in there. It's pretty amazing.
And
really
that is John
I've seen this
Brannon.
At your house. Yeah.
That is John Brannon of Negative Approach on the cover.
Uh-huh.
And who do I, as I look at the anal retentive show notes that I prepared for this,
that is some perfect
who's
timing.
Coming up next?
Yes.
This is the Kings of Hardcore, Detroit's own Negative Approach.
Nothing's ever fucking
Yeah, it gives you a sore throat just listening to it, doesn't it? Yeah, so that's John Brannon singing Nothing. The band is Negative Approach, and that, too, is on Touch and Go Records. You know, hardcore, I think sort of one of the hallmarks of it is really kind of cool bass lines. Yep. Like, in a lot of rock and roll, it's a little hard to hear the bass, but in hardcore, it could be a really sort of prominent part of it.
Yep.
And that bass line is one of my favorites.
That's an awesome.
And it's played by a guy named Graham McCullough, who actually moved to DC. He played in a version of the Meat Men, and he now plays in a band called the X Motorcycle Couriers, or XMC, who are great. And we played with them a few years ago, and I was like, oh my God, you played the bass line on Nothing. It was like I was meeting Paul McCartney. I think he may have been slightly freaked out, but he's a really nice guy. And that is one of my all-time favorite bass lines.
Why do you think that is? What is the importance of the bass in hardcore?
I don't know why it is, but it's just like, I mean, you listen to those Minor Threat songs and it's like, you know, they would start with little like 4-bar bass runs.
Yeah, right.
And it just sort of, I don't know, it was just, maybe it was just another way of being sort of contrary and being like, you know what, we're going to play up the bass part.
Mm-hmm. I also think sometimes greatness comes from when bands don't know any better, right?
Absolutely.
So it was like, hey, I'm playing the bass, like I'm playing the bass, you know. I'm exactly. I'm not just gonna be part of the rhythm section.
No,
right.
I'm just gonna play that. I'm not just gonna play that root note of the chord. Right, you know, every time I'm gonna do something special.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm glad I didn't say what I said before we turned these microphones on, because I made a stupid comment kind of about the difference between how many hardcore bands might have sounded live and how they were captured on record. And I brought up Negative Approach, but that sounded fantastic to me. I know some of their early stuff was kind of roughly recorded, but I do think, I mean, you know, it's so interesting to me. I've enjoyed so much going back and listening to these records. And I know that a lot of people, when you read about this scene and at the time that were involved in that scene, put so much emphasis on the live experience and kind of actually being there at the show and all that stuff. But going back and listening to this music we've been listening to so far this week, it's really thrilling and fascinating, and it's quite a revelation.
Yeah, there's a ton of great stuff there. And on, as we'll talk about on day four, you know, hardcore gets maligned a lot for being, you know, all sounding the same. But really, it was incredibly varied. And there were so many bands that were taking a lot of chances.
Yeah.
Well, and so many people today revere Steve Albini.
Absolutely.
As a producer, right? But this is where he got his start as a producer, right?
Yeah, right. Through the Chicago hardcore scene. Yeah.
Yep. Big Black. So speaking of, appropriately talking about bands that sort of transcended hardcore and took a lot of chances, let's hear Husker Du doing Real World off the Metal Circus EP. So that came out on SST Records. Mm-hmm. Jim is fittingly wearing his SST shirt
today.
In 1983. That is the Husker Du release that immediately preceded Zen Arcade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, people will say like, oh, Husker Du, they weren't really a hardcore band, but they absolutely were. I mean, that is a hardcore record and that is a hardcore song, but it's still, it has so much of what made Husker Du unique. It's got that shimmering guitar sound that like nobody else was doing at the time, and I don't know that I've ever heard anyone do it. I don't know how he got the guitar to sound like that. And I mean, Bob Mould is shouting throughout the song, but what I love is it's still got this total Midwestern sensibility, and the song's all about, like, it's speaking very disapprovingly of anarchy, which anarchy was a big tenet of hardcore punk at the time. People would have like the circle A on the back, but Bob was having none of it. It's got the line, people talk about anarchy and taking up a fight. Well, I'm afraid of things like that. I lock my doors at night. And it's, you know, it's just, God, I love that song. With the possible exception of 8 Miles High, that is my pick for greatest Husker Du song.
The guitar sound is so special. It really is. When you listen to some of the other songs we listen to, there's just something completely different about that Flying V sound and the way he had it cranked up and the way it kind of fit in with everything else they did.
Yeah.
All right. So before we move on, you've been talking about, Hunter, about discovering hardcore through compilations. And I just want to talk about, I had the same experience, although years later. The first one I think I got was... since we're talking about SST now, was a record called The 7-Inch Wonders of the World, which was, that time, I think I bought it on CD, but it was all like SST singles.
Yeah.
So that was where I really pretty much first heard all these bands, Black Flag, Meat Puppets, Minutemen, Husker Du. Plus it also had, Overkill and Worm.
Uh-huh.
The other.
Yeah. I remember those guys.
That was, Chuck Dukowski's pre-Black
Worm
Flag band.
With an umlaut.
That's right. And then the other one I got, which was an SST compilation, was called The Blasting Concept.
Yes.
I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah, we have.
That's actually where I first heard Real World.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So I think I had Volume 2. I don't think I had Volume 1. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at the track listing now. Yes. Yeah,
Volume 2 had like Swa and
Saccharine Trust.
Tom Tricoli's dog, Saccharine Trust.
Yes.
Yeah. Although Volume 1 had Saccharine Trust too.
Okay. So that was where I sort of... kind of first got into stuff in the mid-80s, mid to late 80s, that kind of stuff.
That was a budget price sampler too, which I loved.
Yes. Yeah. And then later, this was 93, so this was later on, I got these two CDs put out by Rhino Records.
Those are outstanding.
Called Faster and Louder, Hardcore Punk Volumes 1 and 2. And first, I was just really impressed that Rhino Records would collect this stuff.
Because
this was not, none of this was like major label stuff.
Right.
And Rhino... was a reissues label that mostly, I think, dealt with major label releases and sort of repackaging things or putting stuff back out that had fallen out of print and they would get the rights to or whatever. But that, you know, somebody actually had to go out and collect all this music these independent labels and 7-inches and stuff.
And some weird stuff would pop up on here, like the Stranglehold, She's Not Leaving, which is a great song.
That's so good.
But is really obscure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they did their homework. And remember, and they've got a really red song on here.
Yeah.
And the Staines version of John Wayne was a Nazi before they became Millions of Dead Cops. Remember, Rhino also put out those amazing power pop and new wave compilations right around the same
time.
That's right. Which I got, I went to a Best Buy and they were all cutouts. I got like the complete sets for like maybe $20 total.
That's amazing. Killer. Those are great compilations. Yeah.
But this has a lot, this Faster and Louder has a lot of the stuff that we're playing, or a lot of the bands we're playing here today, right? Including this next one.
Yeah, this next one is the Zero Boys from Indianapolis, and this song is called Civilization's Dying.
That's a big rock song to
me. Oh, yeah, amazing. Yeah.
Everything about that song is great.
Yeah, it really is.
It's from like 1982.
Yeah.
The production is amazing. Like, I mean, and I hadn't even heard that song until a couple of years ago, and it was like a revelation when I heard it. It sounds so great. It's got that great bass line. It's got a 4-note guitar solo.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's, and that's like world class snotty punk rock vocals. And I love the chorus with the Pope and the president and the big rock star who made a lot of money all got one thing in common. They know it ain't no fun to get shot with a gun, which is either the most profound thing I've ever heard or the most moronic, right. But it doesn't really matter because if you attach it to something that anthemic, I want all of that you got.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And for me, this has been the big kind of surprise. I had read about the Zero Boys. I heard their name before, but I just had never listened to them and went back and listened to this stuff and just have really been enjoying it. It's tight, as Hunter said, melodic. There's just incredible twists and turns in these songs that are sometimes as short as 40 seconds or a minute and a half. It's really amazing. So, and Secretly Canadian reissued this record, Vicious Circle, about 5 or 6 years ago. So okay. The LP and CD are out there for you to get, for you guys to go and get. So I would definitely encourage you to do that.
Indiana label.
Yeah,
right.
That's right. Yes. Doing a solid to the Indianapolis.
Do you know what label it was originally on?
I do not. Nimrod Records.
Yeah, how could you forget Nimrod Records?
I don't know how that slipped my mind. They had to have put them out themselves, right? It's crazy. But you know, bringing that up, I'm really glad we got into that because I think that that's the other thing about hardcore, just like we were talking about with Black Flag, with the touring. It really inspired a lot of DIY, and I think partly, like we were talking about yesterday, none of these bands were ever going to get signed to CBS or EMI or Warner Brothers, you know, like the Pistols and the Clash. So they knew they had to do it themselves, and they wanted to hear it, and they did it. And that has precipitated, just like Touch and Go and Discord and all these labels that are still going, that's where it all started, was just that ability to document, you know, yourself and you hear yourself. So if it was Nimrod Records, it was Nimrod Records.
That's right.
Kind of amazing.
And you picture guys, you know, stuffing the 7 inches in envelopes and mailing them off, right?
Yeah. Saving all their gig money in a shoebox to get the $500 they needed to press that single or whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
borrowing it from their parents.
You're absolutely right. That's one of the most inspiring things about punk rock.
Yeah.
And something that, you know, the risk of sounding corny, I try and impart to my children. Like, you know, if you want, like, just do it.
You can
like,
do it
try.
Yourself.
And even if you fall flat on your face, like, who cares?
Yeah.
That's right. I do think, though, you know, when we talked about with the Zero Boys, that they seem to have a really good like rock sensibility,
doubt.
If they had a Glyn Johns producing them,
you never know,
they could have sounded like something. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think, and this is coming from the dim recesses of my mind, I think one of the Zero Boys actually ended up becoming like some sort of relatively big time producer.
Oh, really?
Or something like that.
Okay.
I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Mahern is the vocalist who did that just incredible
great
vocal
singer.
Performance.
Yeah. And I will say, too, for additional reading, folks, there's a really interesting book out there called The History of American Hardcore. I think that might be the title. Stephen Blush, I know, is the author. And they later made a movie kind of based around the book.
Yeah, it's just American Hardcore.
Okay. It's good. It's very, very good about going really in-depth about these local scenes and finding these bands.
Yeah.
As soon as you said that name, I was like, Paul Mahern, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he played with a band that I have a cassette of that I think I played maybe on the old show, I don't know, but called the Datura Seeds.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Out of Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah. He was in that band.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I've heard of them. What do they sound like?
They're not quite like this. They're more like kind of 80s college rock kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, poppy, but not as hard sounding.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So there you go. Yes, I thought it. And it also does say that he has done work as a producer and engineer and stuff like that, and worked with some pretty big name artists, right? So there you go. Yeah.
Fabulous.
All right. Okay. So where are we here?
I think we finished day two. I'm cautiously optimistic there'll be a day three.
So we're not quite at Nick Scalera length. So
that's good. That's because I do not know as much about hardcore as Nick Scalera knows about the Flying Nun Records bands.
But we're close. We're getting close.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Also, the songs are shorter. So I think that helps.
That's true.
Anyway, we are doing this all week, which means that it's how frequent?
Every day.
Every day, right? And so this would be a good time to mention to people that if you have anything you want to share about your own hardcore music interests or what have you, or any of these bands we're playing, call 612-440-1984 and leave a message or email rock@suburbspod.com or hit us up on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those @SuburbsPod.
That means you, Craig Rosen. Give us your SoCal hardcore stories.
And also, if there's anybody out there that just is like, they're sitting in their apartment in, I don't know, Echo Park, the Echo Park section of Los Angeles, you know, and they got a few minutes, you know, why not call in?
Hey.
Give us some feedback.
That's right. You're just resting up.
So, day three tomorrow, we're going to cover one of your favorite bands.
Yeah, we are going to cover the band TSOL, or True Sounds of Liberty, who were absolutely my favorite band when I was 13 and might still be now that I am in my late 20s.
All right, that sounds good. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Hunter Bennett. And we will see you tomorrow. See if you had read your notes, your 18 pages of show notes that I circulated.